So the sermon's called A Prayer for Peace, and I guess there's a legitimate question, do I have a prayer for peace? Does humanity have a prayer for peace? And unlike what I usually do, I'm going to wait till the end to give the answer, to make you sit here, because I do have an answer. But peace is really hard. This is not a sentimental sermon. We're not going to sit around mourning the 60s when life seemed simpler and there was a draft, which is why people were excited and universities were exploding. We had a draft today. The peace conversation and the involvement of people, as Muhammad Ali said, people with the connection and the complexion would be a lot more engaged than it is today. But this is not about nostalgia. I promise we will not sing Kumbaya. Okay, if you really want to, Judy. She wants it. Judy will sing Kumbaya. There'll be a special interest group later. It's just so difficult. Every civilization, every great religion holds peace as one of its preeminent values. There is nothing deeper in the Jewish tradition, the idea of shalom, in the Christian tradition of the peace of the Lord, of pax, of pay, in Islam, of salam, in the Hindu faith, of shanti. The idea that we should have and make and value and raise up as a value peace is something that everybody says that we want. We want it for ourselves. We want it for our families. There are very few people who look forward to sacrificing their children in a war. There are very few people who look forward to getting bombed or to bombing. But it seems so very hard to actually wage peace. It's easy to believe in as an abstraction, but then we get involved with our issues of pride and our issues of fear, our inability to say, I'm sorry, our inability to backtrack because pride is something that all great nations and people and institutions and organizations feel, and it makes it so hard just to say, how can we find a way to bridge the differences between us? We human beings have a real problem because our values get erased, get covered up very easily and very quickly by our endorphins, by our epinephrine, by all of those things that flood us and make us just feel a sense of rage. I want peace. Everybody wants peace. But I want peace on my terms. I could be a very peaceful fellow if everybody did exactly what I wanted. I'll bet almost every nation could be peaceful for a while if everybody did exactly what they wanted. My belief is that peace does not really start with that intimidating others. Peace starts somewhere deeper in ourselves, in our own sense of rage, in our own sense of person, in our own security with ourselves and our values and our own insecurities. There is a well-worn path to war. When somebody disagrees with me, that's a large me, not just me personally, when somebody cuts me off in traffic, that's a me personally, the path is you go when somebody has annoyed you from ignoring them to name-calling, to threats, to violence. Some of us can cycle really fast and go to violence without any of those intermediary steps if the adrenaline is running fast enough and the insult seems great enough. And it is so hard to turn away from all of those instincts that we have. It's so hard to build bridges when you think those other bad people are setting bridges on fire. There's a lot of talk about all the problems with fundamentalism in the world, I want to tell you, I don't think that's the major problem. I think there is a state worldwide religion which is Manichaeism. And it's the idea that there is right and wrong, good and evil. I'm good, and if you disagree with me on anything, religion, politics, what restaurant to go to, what movie to see, whatever it is, we don't really balance the importance. The rage can be set off. The righteousness and self-righteousness can be set off by anything. And here's the terrible part, or even a more terrible part of this Manichaean, you get a Manichaean worldview with human beings and our chemistry and wiring, and you get yourself a very dangerous world. A very dangerous world, and that is, in fact, what we have. Theologians used to classically argue something called natural law. It's one of the reasons that they give, some theologians give for not wanting to use birth control. Natural law. That equipment is made to reproduce, so you shouldn't get in God's way. Your ears are used for hearing. Your eyes are used for seeing. God gave us all these things so that we could use them. That's part of the intelligent design argument. God also gave us reason, which you might infer we should use also. But theologians are not as unanimous on that as they are in birth control. The other thing in intelligent design is we also have rage. We also have anger and violence that are as natural to us as feeding is to a shark. And so if you're going to argue nature and intelligent design, that is still a values-free issue. Just because it's natural doesn't mean it's good and it's healthy for us, our families, or our world. And the rage and the ease with which we demonize the other and diminish the other and will subjugate and stop and kill the other is startling, and it is deeply, deeply frightening, and frankly does not bode well for the next hour or so, not to mention the oncoming centuries. Is there any hope for us? Can we, by some act of will, turn away from the rage and let peace happen and wage peace? Or is the world just so big and complex that we can't possibly even contemplating humanity evolving quickly enough to leave those tools that may have served us well in the course of evolution behind, so that we can find a better way of engaging each other and our differences and building bridges? And it is just so hard. Gandhi said, an eye for an eye, and soon the whole world is blind, and we keep going on in these cycles of violence, of vengeance, of revenge, again and again, over and over. And our memories, our historic memories, are long. And our emotional lability, the quickness that we have to engage in the anger and the insult, to do the name calling and the shunning, and all of the various behaviors we use, come to us human beings. I'm not talking about peoples or nations or religions. I'm not doing any of them. The us includes everyone, because we all have that potential. I have that potential. I was driving home from the theater Thursday night, and I'm stopped in the fast lane on Sepulveda Boulevard at a light, and someone didn't have time to wait, so swung off into oncoming traffic, ran the light in the wrong lane. I was filled with a sense of, thank you God that I don't have a gun in the car, because I was just in a rage. And it wasn't personal. It offended my sense of law and order. God, who knew? It offended my sense of how you properly conduct yourself in society. You know, it doesn't do as I want you to do, not as I necessarily do, as words to live by. But I am so close to those edges. I was reminded again on the road, of what all that adrenaline epinephrine is about. Driving here today, a van in front of me blew a right front tire and took out...
How dare it?
And took out two cars right in front of me, and I wove through. This is not the rage thing, but it's the same fight, flight, fear chemistry that is hardwired into our system. How do we turn away? I have to tell you, and this will raise possibly some controversy, that I am involved in a controversy right now that may get very big and very public. As most of you know, I write for the Fullerton Observer, where I'm very moderate and cautious and wouldn't raise any political hackles of anyone. But I also write for the Los Angeles Daily News, about twice a month, op-ed on Sundays. And the piece that is published today, it could raise a firestorm, because it involves a story that was on the front page of the LA Times this week, the third page of the second section of the LA Times, two op-ed pieces in the LA Times, and it's been all over both Fox and NPR. So it's a big story that I'm involved with. I believe that Muslims and Jews and Christians and Hindus and Buddhists can live together in peace. I have been involved for years in interfaith dialogue. As many of you know, I lived in an Arab Muslim country, and I am no hater of either Arabs or Muslims. I teach Islamic civilization. I teach Islam at the University of Judaism, and I am a long-term optimist that dialogue is important, that reaching out and building bridges is an important way that we can try to wage peace. When I found out that one of the fellows that I've been involved in interfaith dialogue with, Dr. Maher Hatout, was getting an award from the Los Angeles County Human Relations Commission, I was really happy, because I had worked with him and I had been involved in interfaith dialogue with him. And when I saw the brouhaha, I looked it up, I followed it up, and I saw tapes of him where I didn't recognize him, where he was using a kind of rhetoric in front of Arab and Muslim groups that's very different from what he was saying when he was in front of Jewish groups and ecumenical groups. Now, this was a man that I really liked. In fact, the two articles that I wrote for the Daily News, I had quoted him, and quoted him glowingly. So when I heard him say, "I will not criticize Israel, what's the point? Butchers do what butchers do," I was really shocked. When I heard him yelling to his Arab audience that the people who made peace with Israel, the nations that made peace with Israel, will be swept into the cesspool of history for their treason, this is not what he was telling us in interfaith dialogue. And I want to make clear to you what my position is, because it's important to the issue of peace. He has every right to his political belief and to his freedom of speech. He has every right not to like Israel, to be appalled by Israeli policies. That is not at all the issue that gives me the sense of personal betrayal. It is saying one thing to one audience and another to a different audience. It is not that those are his beliefs. I was involved in a televised discussion with Dr. Mariati, a woman Palestinian, who could not say any nice things or give much hope for peace or a two-state solution. But that was fine, because what I got from her was real. And my sense of betrayal with Dr. Hatout was, it's like going to couples counseling and therapy and lying and not talking about what's really in your heart and on your mind. And you can't heal breaches through duplicity. We have to find ways, if we are going to make peace in dealing with the real issues in our hearts. When Dr. Hathout was faced with the various tapes that he had made and the various writings, he said, "This is irrelevant to a Human Relations Commission award because I'm not talking," this is a direct quote, "I'm not talking Middle Eastern politics, I'm talking freedom of speech." No. He's not talking freedom of speech. He's free to speak. He should feel free to speak his truth, to speak truth to power, because it is not by hiding our issues or being completely politically correct that we make peace. We make peace by acknowledging our differences, acknowledging even our fear, our pain, our rage, and engaging each other's fears and hopes with honesty and with kindness. It seems to me that where we begin voyages of peace, to look inside at what gets in the way of our hearts, what are these animating things that make us fill ourselves with wrath? What are the things that we dare not speak about, that we try to repress? Because if the price of repression, whether it is political or sexual or psychological, is very high. We need truth, not truthiness, to engage each other. And I am hopeful. This is a big setback to interfaith dialogue, because at the moment, ministers are fighting priests, rabbis are fighting rabbis over whether this is appropriate or inappropriate, whether it's a freedom of speech issue or what exactly it is. But whatever it is, and reasonable people can differ on it, we need to differ with kindness and with candor. We need both of them. We need both of them in order to build real foundations upon which to build real bridges, so that we can know each other and make real and intimate contact with one another. It's very hard and it's very discouraging, and all of our instincts, not all of our instincts, but many of our instincts are just to engage and to destroy when we are angry, upset, and disappointed, and that's obviously not very helpful. I believe that human beings can, like in 12-step programs, one day at a time, one shot of epinephrine at a time, turn away from the anger. And by a conscious act of will, just say, I'm not going to engage this angry part of me today. I'll cool down. I'll write something really nasty, and then I'll see if I still believe it tomorrow or the day after tomorrow or the day after that. I believe that what we need to do is start with ourselves and not simply pray for peace, but I've always been most moved by St. Francis's prayer, because it doesn't simply say, God, let's have some peace and I got nothing to do with it, just give it to me, grant it to me, cover me with peace that I may be a peaceful person. It says, God, make me an instrument of your peace. It is asking for the help, the power, the emotional energy to stay engaged with our authentic selves and with the authentic selves of others who differ, and to choose to bring peace instead of war, love instead of hatred, connection instead of severing the connections. This is the prayer that I believe humanity has. And it's one that people of all faiths, I believe, can engage in. Whatever your theology, asking the source of life for the strength to engage others with kindness and candor, turning down the rhetoric that goes from insult to ignoring to name-calling to violence, and step it back, so that we come back to a place where our eyes and our hearts and our hands and our arms open to embrace each other. It's not a one day, we'll all get it, It is a one day at a time, one moment at a time, one issue at a time, maybe even just one heartbeat at a time, where we decide not to let that inheritance of the jungle win, and to use the human reason to interpose it between the instincts and oblivion. I believe that humanity can do this, and that it is not too late, and that in the words that we've already heard today, we are indeed instruments, can be conscious instruments of healing, of love, and of peace.